Into the second quarter, then, of the Soul Show with me, Ian Gray, on BBC Radio Cambridgeshire. And as promised, we will have the letter I on the ABC of Soul, and we'll have some gig news. But before any of that, I caught up with author Reg Dickens last week, and I asked him, Reg, why exactly did you write this book?
Well, really, I suppose it was down to me mates. About 10 years ago, we all sort of like, after having our children and families and growing up and what have you, we all came back to the scene, and a load of people knew I had this record collection, and they asked me to put some of my records down on a tape. And I said, well, what I'll do is I'll tape them, and I'll tell you where I bought them, and I'll tell you a little story if I can. And I'd done some of these tapes, and people were blown away by them. And one guy, he said to me, you've got to write a book, Reg. I said, you're having a laugh.
I mean, what strikes me about it, Reg, having read the book, and it, in a sense, it's on the front cover, because A Life Surrounded by Soul Music, fair enough, if it's going to be a book about Northern Soul and you're going to call it Searching for Soul, I'd expect to see that. But the bit that strikes me is where it says, and lovely people. Because that, and when you read the book, you realise it's as much about people as it is music.
It's really, although it's about soul music, all aspects of soul music, it's also about growing up, diving and ducking, buying your clothes for the first time, your first girlfriend, all things like that, really. I've even had I had an old lady say to me, I've read your book. And I said, but you're an old lady. She said, and I know nothing about soul. She said, I might be an old lady, but I know nothing about soul music, but I do know a little bit about life, Reg. And I asked her if she had a favourite piece, and she said, oh, yes. I said, she said, I know it off by heart. I said, go on then. She says, to buy our clothes in them days, the big stores ran a club card. Auntie Ruby was in the Provvy, and my mum was in the Co-op. But this was no good to me, because I wanted Levi's. She said, brilliant piece of writing.
Yes.
It took me straight back.
I think that's that's one of the things that is, to me, is the appeal of the book, because it's its ordinariness, because every so often there's a little bit in the book that all of us, whether we're into soul music or whether it's fashion that was driving us at that time, whatever, you can just identify with it being a little bit of your own life as well as Reg Dickens' life.
Yeah, that's right. A load of people have read it and called me name, you little so-and-so, you've stole my life. And all different people react to different parts of it. The football fans relate to the Bill Shankly bit.
Yes.
And they have a little tear, whoever they support, and they're calling it the fever pitch of soul music.
Well, what better compliment than that?
Oh, yeah, wow.
I tell you what, Reg, let's have a bit of music. You've picked a Junior Walker track for us to start with.
Yeah, it was in the early days. A Motown record was coming out every week, and they weren't played on synthesizers and things like they are nowadays. They were played on instruments, and to see Junior Walker live, play this tune at the California Ballrooms, it sends tingles through me body just talking about it.
Thank you.
Junior Walker's Walk in the Night. That's choice number one for Reg Stickings, who's my guest, Searching for Soul. Reg, just talk me through sort of how the book actually came about, because I haven't counted the pages, but it's a fairly thick book and it's a fairly large paperback, so must have been a lot of time and trouble to get that together.
Because I struggle a bit with me reading and writing, I'm afraid it took me 7 years. And I used to write it after me weekend. If I'd been souling on a Sunday night, I'd sit in the chair, and my wife would be home, so I'd be out to ask her spellings, and I just sat there with me pen. When it was first mentioned that I should write one of my girlfriends come down to set it up on the computer, and I only lasted about 20 minutes. And I found her up with a tear in my eye, and I said, this computer's having a laugh, or I'm rubbish. She said, you're not rubbish, Reg, I'll come down. She came down, had a little fiddle with the mouse and that, and she said, I'm afraid you've got to write the entire book by hand. She said, and as soon as you've finished a chapter, while it's fresh in your head, you fetch it to myself or your sister and you read it to us, because we can't understand your writing.
I went on to ask Reg, what was the issue with the computer?
I couldn't get a rhythm because it kept telling me that I'd spelt it wrong.
Right.
So the only way I could get a rhythm into the writing was to sit there with a pencil, like I said, pencil on the Saturday, yes, on the Sunday night, write it down, and then the next thing you know, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. I thought, Jesus, I've got to get off for work in a minute. So once you got writing, something had come into your head, and you think, oh, I've got to write about that, but I'll write about that in a minute. So it might be a bit jumpy, but I know a lot of dyslexic people are reading it, and they're phoning me up to say that they've read a book.
When I was reading the book, it did keep coming back to me that, you know, you admitted in the book that you struggled with reading and writing at school, yet you still produced a book. So it was quite inspiring in that sense.
If I'd known that it was going to go as big as it's got, I would have probably been too frightened to write it. I was so green, I just done what me. I thought, well, I'm writing this for me mates. And my object was to put a book on me mate's mantelpiece, and they quite like it.
There's a few mates bought it since then.
Yeah, I've sold 3,000 copies, and they're about to reduce the size of the book. Not the content, just the size of the book. For the airport.
Let's have another track now then, Reg, to creep in before we get to the traffic.
I'd like we're playing Northern Soul tune, not one of your big fast stompers. We'll play a tune by Esther Phillips called Nobody But You.
Nobody cares about me. Nobody.
Esther Phillips and Nobody, but you'll be chatting a little bit more with Reg Stickings.
On BBC Radio Cambridgeshire,
this is Ian Gray.
And still to come on tonight's Soul Show, we're going to be featuring the letter I. Who are you betting on? The Impressions, the Intruders, or the Isley Brothers? I know where my money is. Meanwhile, before we get there, though, a little bit more of my chat earlier this week with Reg Stickins, when I said to him, Reg, your book, it's not just about Northern Soul, is it?
No, it's about soul music right across the board, and it starts with the reggae. When we first got into this music, well, the first soulfully type record which turned me head towards this music was The Letter by the Box Tops.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And they're a white band.
Yes.
But there was something about the record. And then 13 years old, between 12 and 13, we were allowed up the youth club. And there was a different reggae record. It was all reggae. And then the Skinheads was there, and I was just a little bit too late for the mods. My Auntie Carol was a mod, and I used to play some of her records, like La Who and House of the Rising Sun and things like that. But a little bit too late for the... But also, while the soul music or the reggae and that was being played, the hippies, there was a load of hippies around.
They were the day.
And they were all going to Massachusetts with flowers in their hair. But we were soul fans at an early stage, influenced by reggae.
But what was interesting as well that I think makes it a little different from perhaps what a lot of Northern Soul fans would admit is that even after you got into the Northern Soul scene, you then did go off into a jazz funk scene for some time.
Yeah, I'm afraid I did. It was the third anniversary when I left Wigan Casino. I'd gone from the second week it had opened. And on the third anniversary, I don't believe you can knock something unless you immerse yourself in the centre of it. Things were happening down the gold mine. The jazz funk scene was out. There was a DJ, nutty as a fruitcake, called Chris Hill. You used to hear Robbie Vincent on the wireless, Radio London, Tony Blackburn, and them were playing all this soul music. And I thought, right, well, I've had a look at this side, I'm going to go and find the other side. And I did. I went from Wigan Casino at its finest. I looked over the balcony, I made sure all my mates was all right, and then I thought, right, this is it. I'm going to go and have a look at the other side.
Big step.
Massive step. I had to sell me Wigan breeches and get a pair of Glenn Miller-style trousers and a mohair jumper and plastic sandals. But, like I say, you can't run something down unless you've immersed yourself in it. If you don't know what it's about, how can you talk about it?
Fair comment.
Straight from there, I ended up at the Pinnacle. I ended up in the jazz clubs in London. Donald Byrd and all that.
So quite a real spectrum of music, really.
Oh, fantastic. And do you know what? I can go anywhere nowadays. I could even go to a rave and have a really good night. And with sharing, one minute I'm at Caister or I'm in the Squire at Romford, which is jazz funk, and then the following night I'm at Peterborough or wherever, it's just to change your clothes and you kick off again and to learn all the different dance steps as well. I learnt to jive down in the gold mine when they used to play all the Glenn Miller music. Terrific. Great fun.
We must have another track then. It's Bobby Sheen this time.
Yeah, and another easy listening to. I do like the records where you can hear the vocals. Easy listening, lovely record. Something new to do, Bobby Sheen.
Another way to pass the time of day, a way to spend my time to keep you off my mind. Watching her cloud through the sky go slowly drifting by, like feeding the birds in the park and counting the stars after dark.
I guess, Reg, we don't want to give kind of too much away about what's in the book, because we want people to buy it, don't we? but let's spend a few minutes just talking about what's happened, really, since you wrote the book. It's been out, what, a year?
It's been out a year now, and I really had no idea that what's happened this year. It's been a topsy-turvy year. I've met famous people. Famous people have asked me to sign their book. It seems unreal. And I've been on telly as well.
Everybody has their 15 minutes of fame, but I think you've had a year of it.
Yeah, I have. I've travelled around the country, different radio stations. And I've stayed with families who don't even know me, but they're all my best friends now. So my friend circle has got even bigger, you know.
Something you've said when we were chatting off air, and certainly when we met at the Hunstanton Soul Weekend, something you said has stuck with me, which is you've had a wonderful life, and you're such an enthusiasm, not just about the soul, but you have had a wonderful life, haven't you?
I've been a bit diving and ducking, I suppose. In the early days, we had to learn how to make a shilling. And that's all what life's about. If you can make a shilling, you might be able to get a house one day.
And I guess what we should say to people who don't know is they might be thinking, well, how does he make a shilling apart from writing a book? But can you think of anything more extreme than being a carpenter on the one hand and a ski instructor on the other? Because that's you.
Yeah, I do a little bit of skiing and a bit of a ski intuition. I'm an off-piste guide. My official title is an alpine ski leader.
Right.
In the ski world. I'm a carpenter by trade. I work in my back garden. I make things for the public because I had a sick child in the early days. Writing books wouldn't make you a living. I get a pound a book.
Right.
And I have sold 3,000, but I've got to pay tax on it yet, and I've spent most of the money driving up and down the country doing different interviews and things. But what a year. What a year. I had no idea. I've done talks to dyslexic children, a talk with Barbara Cartland's son. Me? Rich.
But the fact of the matter is, Reg, I mean, it's an interesting story to tell. It's ordinary in the sense, like, it's like reading somebody's personal diary.
I wrote about things which would probably embarrass people, but even when I wrote, I've wrote about me mates, me family, but the way I'd done it was I'd phone them up and say, this is what I wrote, what do you think?
Did you have to change any names to protect the guilty?
Only on one occasion where I had a little fumble at college. But you can read about it.
Yeah, we'll keep mum on that, I think. Reg, let's have another track. And before we do, I must just say thanks for coming in.
It's been a pleasure.
We've had a good laugh. And I've got a feeling we might invite you back again. Because you bring along some nice music. And there's a few little anecdotes in the book. And no doubt a few that aren't in the book. That we can have a chat about. But your choice number four goes back to
middle of the Wigan Casino in its heyday. They used to call them stompers. And when you look over the balcony at Wigan, if you see five Northern soul dancers dancing, it looks quite good. 1600, it looks unbelievable. I think we'll play Keep On Running Away by Bits and Pieces. It's a lovely stomper.
Well, thanks for coming in, Reg Stickin.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for asking me.
Keep on running away,
my, my.
Good old chat there with Reg Stickins. Still to come. Slightly late, but better late than never. We're up to the letter I in the ABC of Soul. We'll be doing that in a second or two. And a few gigs that we need to tick off in your diary as well.
BBC Radio Cambridgeshire.